Welcome back to Nos Audientes, your Sounder at Heart podcast. I'm Jeremiah Chan. I'm joined as always by Aaron Campo. Let's just get right into last week. A big tie, 1 point from the Philadelphia Union. We got a goal from Alvaro Fernandez in the, stoppage time? Was that stoppage time goal, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, it was the 91st minute, I believe.
There you go, 91st minute. And that's a, that was a big play for Alvaro. I mean, this is a guy who has been kind of in the doghouse for most of the year. And this was his first goal since Kansas City, scoring against Kansas City at the end of last year. I want to say that was in week 28, maybe?
It was, it was when the games didn't really matter all that much anymore. I remember that for sure.
Yeah, in any case, so it's been quite some time since he scored. And it was a pretty impressive goal, I thought. I mean, it was a nice pass from Freddy Montero, and Alvaro got enough of his head on it. It was a pretty clever little flick of his head, and it ricochets off the goalpost and in. And Sounders are very happy with a point there, I'd say.
Yeah, I think they deserved a point too, and I think that was an important thing to take away. Losing a game like that where you play fairly well. I mean, no one blew anyone away, but, you know, they were playing in a biblical monsoon, so, I mean, it wasn't going to be the prettiest game anyway. And, you know, I mean, the Sounders did not get outplayed by Philadelphia. Philadelphia's goal came on a deflection, on a free kick. The free kick was, you know, probably well-deserved, but it was in a dangerous area, but, you know, the wall got up and did their job, and it just hit the wrong part of the wall and went in, and so, you know, it would have been an annoying game to lose, especially with all the pressure that was created at the end. I mean, Alvaro had a shot blocked off the line by a defender.
Just a minute or two earlier.
Yeah, like just a couple of minutes earlier than that. And at that point, I just felt awful for him because, I mean, he looked really...
And that was a well-taken shot, too, I thought. I mean,
it was,
he essentially volleyed it from about, 15 yards or so, and it just hit Danny Califf right in the face, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he was exactly where he needed to be. He had good reactions on it, and he basically, the only place that wouldn't have been a goal is where the ball ended up going. But, you know, on a volley reaction shot like that, there's not much else you can do but put it where it wants to go. He was definitely excited. He was pumped, but he looked relieved too, if that makes sense. Like it was like
he did. I agree. He had that. His reaction was much more of a relief, kind of like a weight had been taken off his shoulders than pure ecstasy.
Yeah, and it's I think that the thing with Alvaro that I mean, this is just conjecture, obviously, but I think that when a player of that caliber, you know, when they're taken out of the starting lineup and even out of the 18, they probably start to doubt themselves. I mean, people assume that Alvaro is angry at Siggy, and I think he, you know, there's probably truth to that. I don't know. But I can see him start to doubt himself, too. And that's, you know, maybe if that was the case, that was a little reminder that, no, I'm still pretty good at this game, and you know, I belong here. So it was just good to see in a lot of different respects.
Yeah, and actually, I was at training today, and both Alvaro and Siggy kind of talked about the game, and kind of, they didn't really get into a lot of the specifics of what they talked about before the game, but apparently they finally had a sit-down, and Siggy was kind of upfront with, and one of the realities is that Alvaro still does not really speak English almost at all, and so he needs a translator to have almost any communication with Siggy. And so, you know, I think that creates an extra level of frustration because Alvaro probably doesn't feel like he can have a, you know, a real man-to-man conversation with Siggy. And Siggy is probably frustrated that he can't really articulate to Alvaro what he really wants him to be doing and what he's not seeing. That said, one of the things that Siggy did say was that a lot of times a player will kind of plateau in not necessarily their effort, but with what they're giving the team. And they believe that they're giving the team 100%, but they just, you know, they kind of aren't. And that seemed to be what Siggy was implying, was that he just needed more out of Alvaro than he was giving him. And it sounds like he got that both in training and in the game. And it's not entirely clear what he was not doing, whether it was, you know, defense or just being more aggressive on offense or whatever it was. But there was somewhat of a, I don't want to say an attitude change, because that makes it sound like Alvaro had a bad attitude, and I don't think that that's what was going on. I just think that it was a matter of wanting more from him.
I think that, you know, I know what I noticed during the game, and I noticed Alvaro doing a lot more tracking back on defense. And I don't want to say that as an indictment of the way he'd been playing before, because, you know, I don't think there was anything wrong with the way he'd been playing before. In terms of, for most teams, I think what he was doing before would have been fine. But, you know, Siggy wanted him to do more of that maybe and wasn't articulating it well enough. Maybe it was the case, you know, like you were kind of alluding to, with maybe a communication breakdown or something of that regard. So he looked like a different player in a couple of aspects. The tracking back was one of them. He seemed a little more aggressive, like you were saying, I think. And, you know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone be critical of Alvaro's attitude or his work ethic or, you know, his skill. I think Siggy kind of alluded to that, you know, in the post-game interview. I don't remember the specifics of what he said, but I mean, basically what I took from that was, you know, this wasn't an issue of laziness or an issue of him,
right,
you know, not being, of him having some sort of like prima donna attitude. It was just that he maybe needed to change some things about the way he played the game to give MLS, you know, to give the Sounders what the Sounders need in this league. And, you know, maybe he's kind of getting that now, and I hope so, because he looked very dangerous at the end of that game.
Yeah, and it's, I don't, and certainly Siggy stopped pretty well short of guaranteeing that Alvaro is going to be starting on Saturday, on Friday, I guess. And I don't know that it's, we shouldn't probably assume that Alvaro is going to start. Although I guess they're, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves without throwing the game, you know, too far in the rear, but I would say there's probably a decent chance that if Freddie Montero can't go 90 minutes, which I don't know that there's any reason that we should expect that he can, he's still got a pretty big cast on, and it's probably smart to take a slow approach with bringing him back. But I wouldn't be shocked if Alvaro is at least in the mix for starting on the right this week.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if Alvaro is, even if he's not starting, if he's not back into the regular rotation of players.
Yeah.
And, you know, really that's all I've ever wanted. I mean, last year it was an issue of him not starting over Niasse, because I thought Niasse was an actual detriment to the Sounders' success. This year, we have good players. You know, it's not going to kill me if Evans is getting the start or Freeburg is getting the start. I just want Alvaro to be in the mix.
I agree with that. I think that he's a guy that has too much talent to be kind of just used purely as a depth player.
Oh, well, there's just, I mean, people have, I've heard a couple people say, you know, he'll get his opportunity in the U.S. Open Cup and the Champions League, and he's too good for that, you know.
He
should not be limited to getting his chances where they come in secondary competitions. I mean, let's be honest about his ability.
So, one other thing I wanted to talk about this game, and I don't know that there's a lot to talk about this game, because I honestly don't know that you can take a lot away from it. I actually was talking to Arlo today, and also talking to Josh Myers, and both of them basically just said that the conditions were like literally a monsoon kind of, you know, it was like as bad as any weather either one of them had ever been in. And apparently they have an open air press box in Philadelphia, and so you know, it's covered, but it doesn't have windows in front,
right?
And so they were just, so the first row of people were just getting totally drenched. But so because of those conditions, I don't think that there's a lot we can take away from this game. But we do have this week, MLS finally released their Opta enhanced stats to the public. And so for the first time, really, we were able to kind of look in real time about what's going on in this game. And they didn't break down a lot of the stats. We don't have everything. But I will say that it fairly articulates what a lot of us saw, which was that this was a really even game. You know, you have the Sounders with 51.4% of the possession. They only passed at 67%, which apparently 70% is basically a league standard or the MLS standard for passing. And they both won 50% of the duels. The Sounders completed almost as many passes because they attempted a bunch more passes. Anyway, you know, you run down these numbers, and it looks pretty clear that this was a pretty fairly even game.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where if I, you know, I'm not sure that there's enough depth in the numbers for me to seriously analyze anything from what we have now, but they definitely back up, I think, what I saw, which was, you know, a very evenly contested game. If there was any advantage in that game because of the weather, I think it probably goes to Philadelphia because at least it's their home stadium. Maybe they're just more used to the pitch and how the ball runs and everything like that. I don't know. But aside from that, I mean, that was just one of the sloppiest games, you know, that you're ever going to see, and for good reason.
These Optostats, we don't have a lot of information, and I don't know that what they're giving us right now is going to really seriously enhance what we can say about the game. But do you think that there, I mean, do you see the potential there? I mean, I'm excited about the Optostats. I'm not necessarily excited about the stuff that they've given us so far. I'm excited about what I hope that they're going to provide, which is more detailed breakdowns and individual players and have more season-long kind of compilation kind of stats of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, more information is generally a good thing. And there are some nice things here. I'm looking right now. I mean, it's nice to have total pass numbers. It's nice to have accuracy percentages. Kind of where I was going, you know, with talking about the game is it's hard to get a sense of how accurate the passing was and how useful it was. I mean, you know, look at these numbers. Philadelphia had 73%. Seattle had 67%. And that's all well and good. And then you look at, you know, at the numbers of passes, and Philadelphia had 381, Seattle had 408. You know, that's neat, I guess, but without a heat map, without knowing where those passes were going, you know, it's kind of worthless. I mean, if
they're all square passes, then it's a lot different than if you're only completing 25% of your passes, but those 25%, I mean, if you're completing... Your pass percentage is going to go down if you're throwing a lot of passes into the box.
Right.
But if you're just making a lot of square passes, you might complete 80% of your passes, but what are you really accomplishing with it?
Right. And I mean, it would be nice, you know, to kind of know how the conditions in that sense kind of affect the accuracy of passing and of crossing and stuff. There's kind of a neat statistic in here of open play crosses. And you know, it'd be nice to see successful crosses, I think. And those are numbers that you can kind of get other places, but I don't trust those other places as nearly as much as I trust Opta. I mean, Opta is, you know, they're Opta for a reason. They're the data that they're capable of providing is fantastic. And, but we definitely aren't getting that here yet. And you know, that makes sense. I mean, MLS doesn't have nearly as much money to devote to this sort of thing as the Premier League does or La Liga does, and there aren't as many media outlets, you know, willing to invest in as much in their coverage of MLS. So, but I do hope that we get a little more detailed information in the coming, I guess, weeks is probably a lot to ask. But
I don't know. That seems to be the timeline that I've been led to believe is realistic, is that this is kind of a slow rollout, but I don't think it should take months.
That was MLS that led you to believe that's the time.
Well, that is MLS. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. It's a start. I was very excited when they announced they were partnering with Opta, and I'm still excited. But you know, as for what's there now, it's neat, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of saying it. It's neat, but it's not really going to give us a lot of depth of analysis.
Yeah, there's nothing predictive there. There's, you know, it's fine. It's cool. But I want more, and you know, sooner the better.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think the funny thing about this, and we'll get off of this subject, but I think the funny thing about it is that what they're giving us now, I feel like, is kind of the bare minimum of what we should have always been expecting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it requires you know, a lot of, I mean, it basically requires someone watching the game and paying attention. Very close attention, mind you, but, you know, still paying attention. And
I mean, it's not all that different than the kind of stuff I've been putting together upon.
Exactly. You
know, watching it by myself and trying. So anyway, it's, you take it for what it's worth, right?
Right. I mean, it's more detailed. I would have expected a lot more, though, from Opta, I guess. But, you know, I mean, MLS has shown sort of a tendency to be out of step with what their fans are actually looking for. And they tend to figure it out eventually, for the most part. So, you know, maybe if people say, hey, you know, this is kind of what we're after, maybe that's something they'll start providing. I don't know.
Well, I think that's we've kind of beat that into the ground, right? That's what we do here. We beat things into the ground.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we're going to move on to the Colorado Rapids, who we play on Friday. It's the big anticipated rematch of the not rematch. It's the reunion of Tyrone Marshall and Sana Niasse.
Oh God.
Well, the big question is, will either one of them play?
I hope not. Well, no, I guess I hope so, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really hope so. Starting.
I don't hope Sana plays, because him at that altitude scares the crap out of me, but I certainly hope Tyrone Marshall plays.
Yeah. So we don't know if Paolo Mascherani is going to play. We don't know if Connor Casey is going to play. There's a lot of unknown factors here, but one thing we do know is that this team is a lot different with Pablo Mascherani and without Pablo Mascherani. And I don't know, what are your... Is this a game where you're just happy to get 1 point just because it's at altitude, or do you think that you really want this is a 3-pointer to you?
If I am forced to be honest, I guess it's one that I'm happy to take 1 point from. I don't know why, but for some reason Colorado just really bugs me, and this is more of a recent development. I've never really felt one way or the other about them, but this year they just drive me crazy, and I don't really get it, but it's. It's definitely there, and
it's so the defending MLS champion smell that gets you going.
That's actually probably accurate, but in a different way than most people would assume, because I think that I started hating them when they won the MLS Cup because I didn't feel like they deserved it. But that's a whole another subject.
On an own goal and a sloppy goal is not enough to get you impressed, is it?
It's not, especially after how they managed to get to the final. But
Wait a minute. Now you're going to tell me that you weren't impressed by their penalty kick win
over a really bad Columbus team?
Yeah,
I am. I was.
Or not, was it the or was it the huge win over San Jose Earthquakes that is not impressing you?
To win the Eastern Conference Championship.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's just so much to hate in that. In that scenario, because I'm just so jealous of their accomplishment, clearly. I would take it, by the way. Colorado is a good team. I think that maybe people have a tendency to overrate them slightly, but, you know, that's definitely a very tough place to play. They have some very good players. They're a difficult team, and I would not be surprised at all to see the Sounders lose this game, because I see some matchup issues, especially. I think that Casey definitely provides some issues. I think for any team, Omar Cummings is very good and very underrated. People sort of tend to fixate on Casey because he's a hideous bald man that's just awful to look at. But I think Omar Cummings is a much better player. They frighten me.
As a follower of EPL, I assume you have a little more of an opinion of Caleb Folon than I do. He had one monstrous game this year against DC United. Yes, DC United, he scored two goals, and he looked like an absolute monster. I don't know a lot about him, though.
I guess he played for Hull.
Yeah, he played for Hull.
They were in the championship most of the time that he was there. You know, I don't know much.
I should know all about him if he played for Wigan.
Yeah, you should. If he played for Wigan,
that's my team.
Yeah, those are your boys. He has looked good this year, apparently. I don't know. I know mainly based off of watching highlight packages from their games this year and watching them last year that they are a very direct team. And I think the Sounders have trouble with very direct teams sometimes. They do not have a ton of size at the back, the Sounders. And, you know, they've also got a lot of speed, especially if Niasse is in the lineup, but Omer Cummings is kind of a burner as well. So, but full on, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really have any impressions. I have nothing to say that will...
Okay. That's fine. We can go with that. We'll print that. Nothing to say from Aaron Campo.
He's going to score like 8 goals now, too. That's the worst part.
Yeah, I know. And then he's going to say, Aaron Campo will know who I am now. I've heard that's a popular motivation for a lot of MLS players.
Oh, the hate mail I get, let me tell you.
All right, well, so we've now thoroughly impressed you with our lack of real insider knowledge of the Rapids, but we do have a little more probably to say about how the Sounders are going to match up, maybe going at the Rapids. Do you think, let's start with Freddie Montero. You think he's going to, you expect him to start?
I expect him to start. I think he looked fine against Philadelphia. I don't expect him to play probably more than an hour, I would say, would be the goal. I mean, the altitude is hell on people. Freddie is not somebody that runs around a whole lot, but it's going to take a toll. And, you know, he missed a few games. He's going to need to work his way back to fitness. So, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if he played the whole game, but I'd be very surprised.
Well, what's your, if you had to, it looks like the choices, if I am guessing, I think that it's either going to be Rosales starting in Freddie's spot or Rosales starting at the right mid. I mean, do you think that's a fair?
I think that's almost a given at this point.
And so if Rosales starts at forward, who do you want to see at right mid? I'm sure you want to see Alvaro, but do you think that he's maybe shown enough to get back into the starting lineup?
I mean, he would be my preference. I would be kind of surprised to see him play, to see him start. I think he'll definitely play. And, Alvaro would be my preference. I guess Freeward would be my second preference. But I really think that the most likely scenario has Rosales starting on the right. In which case, the question, I guess, becomes Brad Evans or Freeburg, or even Alvaro, but I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. And in that case, I would definitely prefer Freeburg for reasons that we've talked about a billion times. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be interesting. I'm curious how Freeburg might look with a guy like Rosales on the right. I think it's hard to deny that Brad Evans appears to be the pretty clear first choice of Siggy, whether or not he's our first choice, maybe is immaterial, but he seems to have that starting spot pretty well locked up. I don't have a huge preference between him and Freeburg. I would, you know, Freeburg has been an interesting figure this year because he definitely shows a little more ambition when it comes to pushing the action forward. But he has definitely had some lapses that have been costly in a couple games. And he didn't look particularly sharp against Philadelphia, but no one looked particularly sharp against Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that Freeburg, it's funny because I think his best games definitely came in the middle, or at least the games that stick out to me as saying, like, Freeburg is awesome, you know. But I think his more costly mistakes also came in the middle, so maybe the right is the better place for him. But he just hasn't been that impressive since he's moved out there, and that's probably not fair because he had the bubonic plague for one game, and then the second game, you know, was played during the Great Flood. So he's played what, 3 games on the right now that he's.
Because he played 1 game on the left, he played the first 2 games in the middle.
Yeah, and then he
and
had
then he
one
last
on...
3 on the right.
Yeah, so, you know, we haven't really, I guess, seen him enough at a wide position to judge him fairly. But I do think you're right in that, you know, he does do some kind of reckless things in possession, and it's definitely cost the team a few times, and maybe that's minimized when he's split out wide. But, you know, I think Rosales is pretty well camped out wide if Montero is starting. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm very curious to see because, you know, Freeburg and Evans haven't really been in direct competition because Ziggy has found a way to get them both in the game. I think he really likes both of them. So it'll be interesting to see if the choice comes down to between those two, which one he gives the nod to. I have my suspicions, but...
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right on that. I would say that the, you know, it doesn't take very much to read between the lines. Today, I asked Siggy what he sees Alvaro as, if he sees him as a right mid, as a left mid, as a center mid. And he said, well, I think he's clearly better on the outside. You know, we could use him in the middle, but I think we have a couple guys that are probably ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think it takes much thinking to figure out who those two guys might be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Siggy likes what he likes at certain positions, and what Alvaro brings to the table, I don't think Siggy likes that much in the center. And that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, I think we'd like to see... A lot of us would like to see Alvaro play in the middle, but... I don't think that the style Siggy plays, if he really would be the best fit. And, you know, maybe I'd like Siggy to be a little more flexible than he is tactically, but I don't really see that happening anytime soon. And, you know, he's done okay by how he does things. So, you know, every coach is going to have things that bug people, and that's maybe the one that Siggy has that bugs me. But, you know, the reality is I think you're right that Alvaro is not going to be moving to the center in any meaningful capacity.
Although I would like to think that that Alvaro is maybe at least getting to the point where he can beat out Freeburg on the right.
I mean, that seems fair.
Go ahead.
Well, it's crazy when you actually think about the number of quality midfielders this team has. It's like there are four people, you know, vying for two spots, and I really am not uncomfortable with any of them. I mean, I have my preferences, but it's kind of shades of gray, and you know, I think really what it comes down to is maybe who you like watching play more at a certain point. I mean, I don't know. I can't really make a super strong case for Freeburg over Evans, or for Alvaro over Freeburg, or, you know, for anybody over Rosales. I mean, it's a blessing, but I don't really see how it's ended up this way in this league.
Yeah, and something I didn't even think about, Servando Carrasco started a game in the middle.
Yeah, no,
and
that's
this
true.
Is a guy that we, and he's played since then, and you know, this is someone that maybe we're, and Siggy has talked very highly of Servando Carrasco. I've liked Servando Carrasco's game. I don't know that he's necessarily a starter on this team, but I could see him being a major contributor. So, you know, this is you know, and speaking of which, we have an interview with Servando Carrasco. That was an odd transition. I realize it sounds like I threw that in there, but we have an interview with Servando that we'll play today, and I don't know, it's a crowded midfield, there's no question. I mean, I think we're talking about literally, you know, legitimately seven or eight guys competing for four spots.
Yeah, I would honestly be surprised if that they're all here at the end of the season, because at a certain point you've got weaknesses elsewhere and you have maybe a little too much strength and you've got to make better use of your resources. And, you know, I don't want any of them to go. I like all of them. I think they're all good players that have something to contribute, but, you know, there can be too much of a good thing, I guess. And yeah, it's great to have very high quality depth, but, you know, what's more useful, that or a new left back, or, you know, a new target forward, or
whatever. Well, not to mix sports metaphors, but it's probably very similar to having, you know, six good outfielders, or you know, five good shooting guards or something, or small shooting guard / small forward type of guys. I mean, at some point it's like, yeah, you have all this talent, but the reality is that there's more midfield talent than there is, you know, talent at any other position probably in the world. And, you know, and there's a reason for that. And so you need to kind of, at some point you need to be able to identify guys that are really, you know, outstanding players, and you need to kind of let those guys be your starters, I think.
Right. Or, you know, maybe trade an outstanding player to position of strength for an outstanding player to position of weakness. I mean, just...
Oh, nice. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just do something to reallocate those resources so that you've got the best possible distribution of talent throughout your lineup, because I think that that's a really important thing. I mean, you know, if this team is going to have trouble scoring goals sometimes, even though they have an overabundance of talent, maybe that's something they should look at.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, anyway, now feels like a good time to kick it off, to transfer us off to that Zurbanda Carrasco interview. We'll be back with Dave Clark of Sounder at Heart fame, and we're going...
Wow, what a get!
Yeah, it's a big get for us, and we're going to go over some of our reader questions.
So anyway, so how has your rookie year been so far?
I think it's been amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I came into a group of guys that are very welcoming. The transition has been a lot easier than I expected. But again, that was a lot to say to the guys too. I mean, you think the hardest part about this transition is the speed of play. But the drills that we do in practice, which is possession oriented and stuff, I did a lot of that in college. So, again, hats off to the guys on this team.
So how I can't imagine you've been on a lot of teams that you guys could come off of a game and then play an hour of softball and be having the kind of fun that you guys. I mean, what is that rare? Or is that pretty? Would you say it's pretty normal for the teams you've been on?
That's pretty rare. This is the first time that we do it this season,
right,
with Seattle, and it was fun, you know. I mean, you come back after you win 2-1 at home, so it's nice to have a good day to relax and to just have some fun.
Who do you think was the most impressive guy out there that you were surprised
Graham.
By?
Taylor Graham.
Yeah.
The
two one-handed homers.
Yeah, he has I think a broken wrist or a broken finger, so he has a cast on his left hand, and he just went up there with one hand and batted twice and hit two over the fence, so that was pretty incredible.
Who would you say provided the most comedy for their baseball skills?
The most comedy, I think Leo Gonzalez. I don't know if you saw
gloves?
Him. Yeah, he was wearing two gloves in the outfield, and in one of the plays, he actually like caught the ball, and he didn't know how to throw it, obviously. So that was pretty funny to watch.
Were you surprised at how many of the guys looked like they had never touched a softball or a bat or anything before?
Yeah, it was mostly the foreign guys.
Right.
Like Eric Freeberg had never played baseball in his life. Mauro Rosales from Argentina, he never played baseball, so it was just funny to watch those guys try and bat and try and catch the ball. So. Yeah, it was overall a great experience.
So most of the American guys had probably at least maybe even played somewhat competitively, I would
Yeah,
imagine.
I mean, some of those guys were hitting bombs. The one guy who actually has played baseball is Ozzy.
Uh-huh.
As you could tell, he was playing shortstop. He was catching every one of them.
Diving catch?
Yeah. So he's very talented when it comes to that. But, yeah, the American guys, most of them have played baseball growing up. So you could definitely tell out there.
So as a Southern California boy, switching gears here, I mean, what have you found Seattle? This winter has been pretty brutal, it seems like.
I mean, yeah, it rains every day. It's obviously a little different than what I'm used to, but I mean, I'm playing soccer every single day, so I really can't complain.
And how would you say that this compared you? Talk a little bit about you. I guess you grew up in Mexico, is that right? And how long were you? You were born in San Diego, but you moved to Mexico as a kid.
Yeah, my parents were living in Tijuana, so we crossed the border. And I was born in San Diego, but then I lived in Tijuana until I was 8, then moved to San Diego until I was 14, then moved back to Tijuana from like 14 to 18 all throughout high school. So I was just moving back and forth.
And did you play in South America for a while,
youth
team or something?
Yeah, I went to CEFAR, which is a soccer academy down there for a couple months. Yeah, great experience. Learned a lot.
And so what is that, being, playing soccer in different places and obviously having very different experiences at various different places, I mean, how does that kind of change your perspective when you're playing in MLS?
I feel like I would say a little more ready than most other guys coming out of college, just because I've gone to Argentina, lived there for 4 months. I've played at Cal, which is one of the greatest universities in the country, and we had a great year this past season, so I feel like I came in very prepared, and I think it's shown pretty well, so yeah.
Have you been surprised, as a second round pick, you've already played in two, you started one game, you've had I guess now two appearances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, were you surprised? Have you been pleasantly surprised at how much you've been able to play already, or is that kind of what your expectation was?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I come in working hard at every single practice, and I mean, I just want to improve while I'm here, and I think that's one of the things that I've been doing. I mean, playing, I played defensive mid, and playing in front of Ozzie Alonso, every time I step on the field, I learn something new. I mean, he's probably the best defensive midfield that we have in this league. So I know that as I spend more and more time alongside him, I'm going to keep learning more and more.
Is there anything that you would say that has surprised you about this league in terms of either the ease that you've been able to kind of fit into it, or maybe that it's been harder, or any of those kind of things?
Like I said before, the speed of play. Definitely a lot faster. And one of the things that I love about Seattle, as you probably know, is the fans. I mean, it's incredible. Every time you step on the field, there's 36,000 people chanting. I mean, there's nothing else in the MLS like that. So, I mean, we're very fortunate as a club to have the fans that we have. So, I mean, whenever you step on the field, it's really an honor to represent Seattle.
And have you ever played in front of a crowd quite that big?
No. I mean, the closest thing we ever had was against Akron last year. They had probably like 8,000 fans, but
right.
It's a totally different atmosphere.
Well, great. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks.
All right. Well, welcome back to Nos Audientes. I'm here with Dave Clark, who, of course, is the founder and managing editor of Sounder at Heart. And so we're going to bring him in and talk about some of the questions that readers sent us. This is, I believe, our first actual attempt to answer reader questions. And this first question, I think, Dave, is going to be something that's right in your wheelhouse. They were asking basically about Marcus Hahnemann, and they wanted to know what we thought his chances of him ending with the club that he started with, and if he might be a summer transfer target, or, you know, basically how that might work out.
I think the key that with Marcus Hahnemann is kind of like the key was with Casey Keller. Can you get him for a large contract with it not being a DP contract? That's one of the things that everybody liked about getting Casey Keller was, yeah, he was amazing. He has this great history, but he clearly took less money to come here. And if Marcus Hahnemann's willing to do that, then the Sounders will pursue him aggressively, I would assume. If he's not, then I definitely think that they are going to be looking outside of their organization for the starting keeper in 2012.
So, and this is just me asking. This is not the reader did not have a follow-up question to that, but I do. And so I'm curious what your sense on if the Sounders would go after him in the summer. I mean, my personal take on it is that it doesn't seem like it would make a lot of sense to spend a lot of money on Marcus Hahnemann in the summer. But maybe that's the only way they can get him. I mean, what is your sense on that?
I agree with you that while it won't make sense in the fall to have both Hahnemann and Keller on the squad, if that's the time that you can get him, that's the time that you can get him. It just I don't think he's the type of player that will be unemployed for half a season.
So you think that the Sounders might have to pick him up in the summer?
Yes, because if they don't, somebody else is going to. He's not going to be available to them in the winter window.
And so what's your knowledge of Marcus Hahnemann in terms of his ties to the Pacific Northwest and Seattle in particular?
Unfortunately for me, Marcus Hahnemann played during a brief 4-year period of time where I did not live in the Pacific Northwest. So I didn't get to enjoy him with the A-League club, but I do know that he played for the A-League Sounders in the pre-USL era. They were good then. They went through several stretches where they were a very good team at that level. Though, you know, with MLS, it's hard to understand. He also has his time with the Colorado Rapids, so I would assume that they don't control his rights. If they do, I wouldn't, and I'm the Sounders, I wouldn't give up a ton to try and acquire a player like that.
And so, and then we'll get off the Marcus Hahnemann thing, but I am curious, you know, I don't know a whole lot about Marcus Hahnemann. I've seen him play for the U.S. national team. I'm obviously aware of his status in the EPL, but, I mean, do either of you guys have much input or much you know, much to add in terms of what Marcus Hahnemann really could mean to the Sounders. I mean, is he Casey Keller light, or is he actually maybe potentially better than Casey Keller?
I think he's probably maybe a tick or two above Keller at this point. He lost his starting job with Wolves, but Wolves had a pretty decent goalkeeper behind him. And, you know, I mean, it's tough to say with keepers because they can go forever and then they can just sort of fall off a cliff all of a sudden. They have kind of a weird aging curve. At the beginning of the year when he was still playing, he was probably better than Keller, but not by much, if anything, and he hasn't been playing in quite some time. So I don't think it would be a significant upgrade, but I don't think it would be a significant downgrade either.
All right, well, anyway. So next question. Dave, this is something that's going to be very right in your wheelhouse, I think, again. So I'll just paraphrase it because it's not really asked of Dave. He wanted us to have you on as a guest, Dave, so you're on. So
he wins.
He wins. Anyway, so what's your sense on things? Basically, they want to know, do you guys get inside info? And if you do get inside info, like, when do you find out things about, like, the Manchester United match? And, yeah, I mean, let's start there. Do you guys get insider info?
In some occasions.
Before it comes out?
In some occasions, we do get the info before it comes out. In others, we do not. And I know that's very vague. several of the friendlies the council knew about before them happening, but we were, of course, told in the strictest confidence. And, you know, I can be honest right now. We did not know about Manchester United beforehand.
And do you think is that something where they selectively, I mean, do you think that's strategic on their part to sometimes leak it and sometimes not? Like, I know that one of the ones that they told you early on was the Chivas friendly. Do you think that they were doing that as a way to kind of gauge the reaction, or do you think that there's not as much forethought that goes into it?
Well, I don't think they told us about the Chivas friendly well before it was announced. I think with Chivas, they might have said that they were exploring a big Mexican soccer team, but not the specific team. With the friendlies, it's not really about, you know, gauging our reaction or anything like that. I think that's just an interesting bone or treat to throw us. That isn't part of their decision. You know, they're likely not to consult us on that because we're talking expenditures and, you know, and potential revenues in the millions of dollars. There are things that they do consult us on, but that moves them from red to black, and that would generally not be, you know, the power that the council has is kind of limited. And finances and decisions on the field of play are not places where we are empowered at this time.
So, okay. So along those same lines, they want to know if you guys have, and I know that I know the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway. Is there ever going to be an alliance constitution? And is it clear how the GM vote would actually work, this famed GM vote?
Well, let's talk about the Constitution first, because we can't have that GM vote without understanding what it is and how it would operate. And that would be part of our the Constitution or Charter or whatever the name is. And we actually have a draft committee that's working on more formal language about the powers, the rights, the responsibilities of the Alliance Council, as well as the broader Alliance, and how those things would work with the club. That there needs to be an understanding, I think, through everybody involved, that the phrase democracy, or the word democracy, particularly as it applies to sports, is different in an organization that is wholly owned by Major League Soccer, of which Paul Allen through Vulcan and Joe Roth and Drew Carey and Adrian Hanauer are the operating investors here. in Seattle. So, you know, those kinds of layered relationships are different than everybody who buys a share of ownership of the club, say Barcelona or Real Madrid.
Right.
We're never going to have that level of power. It's going to be a limited democracy, but at the same point, it's going to be much more democratic than any other organization in a major professional sport in North America.
And so and then the other question, this was a multi-layered question, as you can tell. They also wanted to know, like, who are some of the people that regularly attend this thing, other than the council members? Is it, you know, is it basic? Well, I'll just let you answer it that way.
Well, depending on the given meeting, we have people within kind of the business operations side of things. Gary Wright is a name that most of our readers would recognize. Adrian has been at a handful of them, as well as Joe Roth and Drew Carey, and representation from Vulcan through either Gary Wright and some other people. They consulted us, say, on the iPhone app before it rolled out, have been asking for advice on which operating systems for other mobile devices as well. So we get the ear of the club. We get ownership as well as kind of front office people who attend.
Do you like being on the council? Do you feel like it's a worthwhile thing? Do you feel like it's that you're really kind of working toward something that's special in North American sports?
Yeah, it's been frustrating at times because it hasn't grown as quickly as I wish it would. But at the same point, I have to remind myself that the Alliance Council was kind of the head and organizing factor behind the 2009 Supporters Summit that was held here. And that is still the standard by which all the supporter summits will be judged. We kind of coordinated the various supporter groups and MLS and the Seattle Sounders had a very active supporter summit around MLS Cup final. And that was something that in talking to the people who did the 2008 as well as the 2010, because we had that kind of umbrella organization that is a group of both fans and supporters, it could work with the club in ways that, say, just a supporters group could not.
And so last question regarding the Alliance Council. This has been something that a lot of people have asked, so I felt like it was worth getting into. But was the Alliance Council ever really brought into the jersey selection, specifically the tech fit part of it?
We were not included in the jersey selection. We weren't shown previews, and we didn't not know about it ahead of time. We were invited to the unveiling of the electricity kit, but not involved in this year's tech fit upgrade, I guess. However they're referring to it. No.
And not to get too far off topic, and I'm curious what both of you guys think. You know, now we've had six matches to really take in the wondrous nature that is the Sounders Tech Fit shirts. I'll ask Dave this, but I would also like to get Aaron's opinion. Do you think that people are starting to kind of come around to them, at least not hate them, or do you think that it's going to be a sore subject for a while?
I still think that it's a sore subject. I mean, you can get used to any kind of uniform. I've seen some pretty awful ones in Seattle sports history. But Aaron agrees.
Yes.
But at the same point, I mean, you know, there's kind of a unique aspect to expecting somebody to strap on a jetpack and fly away in the middle of the game. I had a G.I. Joe character that looked quite a bit like these uniforms when I was growing up, and that's what they did. I'm not a fan. I'm really glad that the Rave Green kit I have is from 09, and I won't need to replace it for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I think that the uniforms are hideous. I don't think I've ever really made a secret of that. they would be fine if it weren't for the tarting up with the tech fit straps and the just the other weird details that they have going on. But I think it's funny the motivations people have ascribed to them. Like I've heard people say that, you know, that it was like the front office proving to themselves that Sounders fans would buy anything they would put out there, that were intentionally trolling the rest of MLS, which actually might have some merit. But it's just, you know, no, they're ugly. But I mean, whatever. I've hated the Mariners uniforms for years, and you know, I still love the Mariners. It's just. I'm glad that we're pretty much guaranteed new jerseys in 2 years, but I have a hunch that they're not going to be that much better. So,
you know. Well, there'll be a new third kit next year.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the excitement of the 2 year cycle and getting two of the three uniforms on one and the other on the off year. There's all, you know, which means within any 2 year period, hopefully you like one of the five uniforms you'll see.
Right. I love the electricity, so, you know.
You love the electricity? I didn't know that.
It's awesome. I love it so much.
Do you really?
It's so ugly in just the best way. It's in the it's the same kind of ugly as the Dynamos jersey.
The Dynamos jerseys is not ugly though. The Dynamos jerseys are freaking hot.
They're
okay. So
I
go ahead.
I also like the electricity. I think that it's great. It's I'm not allowed to wear it in small rooms because I blind people. But at the same point, you know, it stands out in a way that kind of the Rave Green did in the first year. It was a color and a symbol that other teams in any sport don't really have, and it kind of captures that. I have no issue with it at all.
Yeah, if you're going to be intentionally obnoxious, just go big or go home, you know?
No, and I'll say that I'll admit that when the electricity kits first came out, I was kind of turned off by them, and I was like, I was not really into them but I have to admit that they've grown on me, and especially the fact that maybe that they won a U.S. Open Cup wearing them is part of what has made me feel so much, you know, like I like them now. I don't mind them at all. I'm a little surprised at that.
Yeah, I think that definitely helped me come around too.
You know, and speaking of which, we haven't seen the Shale shirts yet, have we?
We haven't.
Why do they wait? You would have thought that they would have been looking for excuses to break those things out.
Well, part of the club and its philosophy is that Rave Green is its color. And so you remember in 2009 and 2010. We might have seen the Blues four times within a 2 year period. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and
don't
I mean,
expect to see a Shale.
I don't think the Rave Green really clashes with anything. I mean, they'll have to wear it in Portland, obviously, but
there was some discussion about that though. Is the because of Portland's two tone green, is the dark gray distinct enough from Portland's dark green?
So they can wear electricity in Portland.
Oh, yeah. I like that idea.
There you go.
All right. So anyway, moving on. Last question. I don't know how much insight you'll have into this, Dave, but I'll throw it to you anyway. What do you think? You know what? I'll change the wording on the question because I'll make it more of a hypothetical. And I can tell you that. Well, let me just start. I'm getting ahead of myself. They want to know what talk Siggy had with Alvaro Fernandez, and. And I can tell you from talking to Alvaro today, I don't think anyone really knows. But I'm curious, Dave. I mean, what do you think may have been said?
Well, you talked to Siggy and Alvaro at practice today. I didn't need to because they actually had me conference called in when they had their private conversation.
Of course.
No, I mean it's one of those things we're never going to know 100% unless, you know, somebody started breaking shares that might eventually leak out. But, obviously Siggy saw what he needed to see. Alvaro was in the 18 and saw the field of play again. So, that kind of, indicates that whatever the conversation was, the result is really what matters. We can't be in places that are private in that way, but what we can judge is the result, and obviously the result worked. he was Fernandez played, and yes, it was limited time, but compared to any other stretch of 15, 20-ish minutes that he's played, I would put that up there with any of his other performances with the team.
And that's gonna be, you gotta imagine that's gotta be big for his ego, or his, maybe ego is the wrong word. It's good for his it's good for him personally. You know, the last time he had a real memorable moment for the Sounders was against the then Kansas City Wizards, I believe. And that was in, man, must have been like the third to last game of the season last year. And so other than that, he hasn't really, I mean, I guess it wasn't that long ago, but it was a pretty good stretch of him not being super effective. And
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, I think I overheard Stiggy at one point answering a question when somebody asked about this, and he was like, no, a player that sees themselves as a starter doesn't like to not start. You know, it was, fans really try to look into the psychology of coaches and players, and I think sometimes just too often we can't know the psychology of the coach and the player, but we can know the performance, and we can know the emotional display after that goal was significant. It did seem like a weight off of his chest. It will be it'll be intriguing because they have a game at Elevation this weekend, and you know, they're going to have to use all three substitutes, and probably earlier than they usually do. So I would expect that we may not, you know, whether or not we see Fernandez in the starting lineup again, we're certainly going to see him on the pitch this weekend.
All right. Well, this was No Sadietes. Want to thank you for listening, and hopefully we've gotten most of the technical difficulties worked out of this thing, and hopefully we'll be able to start doing distribution the way we want to do it. And we want to thank you for hanging with us as long as you have. And if you have any tip advice or anything else, you can get a hold of us through Sounder at Heart, and we'll be back next week.